Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. We are 10 episodes into the Slice 3.0 reboot. How are we doing? Why don't you call? Let us know. Gary, I know you have to be listening by now. Call me. 602-635-6976 is the new voicemail number. And we all pause as Gary puts it in his speed dial. with me today is Kevin Batchelder, host of Tuning In to Sci-Fi Television and about 212 other podcasts that are out there. Thanks for joining me, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here. Good to talk to you again, Summer.
I mean, it is 200, right? It's as close to that number.
I think the rumor is that, but no, I don't think it's near that high. It's people like Gary and others who tend to think it is, but it's not quite as many as that. But I do love to podcast, so yes.
It just seemed like every now and then, hey, Kevin's over here. Hey, Kevin's over here. Hey, Kevin's over here. When does Kevin sleep?
Well, I think this is my fourth guest hosting gig this week. So, yeah, I kind of can't lie.
Nice.
So what else? Great way to meet other fans, you know?
Yeah. So what else are you covering besides Tuning In?
Well, yeah, Tuning In is the flagship product. You know, all the genre shows we cover there, my friends, Brent and Wendy. I also do the B-Movie podcast, Saturday B-Movie Reel. I also co-host the Arrow Squad with my friend Brian, covering Arrow, obviously. I do some Lost Girl podcasting, just did a roundtable with some other Lost Girl podcasters with season 5 coming up in a couple of days from the time we're recording this. Yeah. So do that, and you know, like I said, the folks I know who do podcasts, much like yourself, just jump on and have some fun.
Now, is this Lost Girl's final season?
Yes, this season 5 has been announced, is the final season. They extended it the order by a couple eps. It'll be a 16-episode season, but this will be the last.
Okay, bummer. Because I was, there was another imported show that was on Sci-Fi. It was The Almighty Johnsons. I had been looking forward to seeing that, and then they cancel it after season 3 before season 1 even starts airing on Sci-Fi Channel. I'm like, really? That's not fair.
No, but it is a good show. It's still worth a watch.
It is.
It's fun. It's very much fun. But Sci-Fi is burning through them fast and airing them at like 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, jeez. kind of like airing Charlie Jade at 2 in the morning,
right? 2 in the morning, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sci-fi!
Hey, you know, we complain, but at least in the days of DVR, we got a shot at recording them and watching them anyway.
That is true. You don't have to actually stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning to watch anything anymore.
No, those were the days, huh?
Thank you, technology. So let's talk about the new shows that are out there that are catching people's attention. Constantine caught my attention very quickly, and I'm literally enjoying the hell out of that show.
Yeah, it was probably the show for new genre shows, the one I was most looking forward to as well. So I've been enjoying it. I don't think it's hitting on all cylinders yet, but it has been, you know, good amount of fun. And like a lot of new shows, it's just taken a little while to really find its feet.
Yeah, it's definitely improving though. I haven't seen one episode that I didn't like at all, and some of the newer episodes have been just incremental improvements, a little bit of character interaction, that kind of a little bit of writing been tightened up a little bit.
Yeah, I know some folks were a little disappointed in the last week episode. They didn't quite think that was a continuation of kind of the uptick. And just one note there, if you weren't aware, that episode, which kind of had a Halloween theme to it, which seemed a little out of place, come to find out that was actually the second episode shot. So that's kind of that thing when they went through and changed the female lead. This was the one that happened in between, and then they chose to air it now. So
they've aired them out of order.
This one, at least. This one got dropped in an odd spot.
Yeah, because Halloween was, what, a month and a half ago?
Yeah. Kind of like the Community episode, the Christmas one that aired in February, whatever it was.
Right. But like I said, the episodes have been ticking up for me. And thanks to Hulu, I've actually watched a couple of the episodes a second and a third time. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot. For me to go back and watch an episode again that soon, there's something there, and what was it, the episode before the Halloween episode, when they were in New Orleans.
Yes.
That one really caught my attention. I enjoyed that episode.
Yeah. I like the one, I think it was just before that. To me, that's when it took a really good uptick, was when it got a little darker.
The Hunger Demon?
Yeah, he was dealing with, he had one of his old
friends.
And he kind of put him in a tough spot. So I'm like, okay, this is the Constantine I expected, a little darker.
Yes, exactly. So for everyone out there who's still saying, okay, so what is Constantine? Constantine is NBC and Warner Brothers teaming up to bring the comic Hellblazer to television. Thankfully, they aren't going in the same direction that the movie starring Keanu Reeves went in. That could have been better. But
yeah, but it wasn't all bad either. So.
It wasn't all bad, but it wasn't Constantine.
I do. I know what you mean. I'm not big on the background and the mythos, but I realize it wasn't very true to what most folks would had the experience with.
Right. Most people who were fans of Hellblazer were going, it was okay, but it wasn't our guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And thankfully, we have a couple of people on board now who are familiar with the DC universe, who are familiar with the comic book universe, who are familiar with Hellblazer's little section of the DC universe. And it's coming across very well. I mean, David Goyer was responsible for Batman Begins.
Yep.
Doesn't get much more DC than that.
Yeah, no, real good pedigree there, certainly.
Yeah. So I am happy, you know, even though, I mean, Hellblazer was one of the few DC comic titles I read back in the day. I was a diehard Marvel girl, but there were a couple of DC titles that I read. And believe it or not, I was never into Spider-Man. I was never into Batman. I was never into Superman. They weren't me. And I realize everybody who's in comic books is going, what? I'm like, I didn't care about Spider-Man unless it was in the Marvel team-ups. Batman kind of bored me before I read Dark Knight Returns. And Superman, it just seemed like he was a different person every year. And I couldn't grab onto that. I couldn't latch onto that. So I just never paid any attention to them. In the DC world, my guys were Green Arrow, Hellblazer now and then, and occasionally the Teen Titans.
Yep.
And seeing Hellblazer, seeing the John Constantine I was familiar with come to this screen makes me happy.
Oh yeah. Yep. And I know some folks are a little concerned that are like, well, didn't I hear something about that they already canceled this show? And that's not the case, folks. This is just a case of, 13 episode order. They chose not to put on a back nine on it, but it isn't dead per se. I mean, it's never a good sign when they don't add nine. But as we know, some shows do better in the smaller format. So mm-hmm. NBC is still keeping the possibilities open there. So it'll be a 13 episode season with, what do we got, five or so that have aired. So you can still jump in here, folks.
Yeah, this week's episode will be number 6, so there's still plenty of time to catch up. There's still plenty of time to make the ratings worth it. Mm-hmm. And usually people have become a little gun-shy with speculative fiction shows. They wait and see. They don't want to watch a new TV show for 3 episodes and then have it be yanked. That's just hurtful.
Yeah. No, I know. A lot of folks are gun-shy that way. I hear you. I mean, it's not me. I love to dive in, but I certainly know the feeling, so.
Mm-hmm. So when I started reading about how NBC didn't order the back nine, and then I started seeing news on the blog saying it's been canceled, I'm like, no, wait, hang on.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want folks panicking.
Yeah, the show has not been canceled. It was only, they only left it at the original 13-episode order. It's still on NBC's list of shows. If the ratings stay where they are, it very well could get a second season pickup as early as February. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet, but I am right there beside the the guys on Twitter, Daniel Cerrone, Daniel V. Cerrone, and the John Constantine writers room, I'm right there going, hey, watch the show. Save Constantine.
Yep. Do your part, folks. Here we go. Talk it up.
Talk it up. Watch it. Go on to Hulu and watch it. You can always catch the most 5 recent episodes for free on Hulu. So go catch it. And if you want to catch the pilot episode, you're going to have to go buy that on iTunes like I had to. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah, it might even be up there. I'm not sure on the Hulu Plus, if you're willing to spend a few bucks a month for the Hulu Plus option.
I didn't see episode 1 in the Hulu Plus section.
Oh, was it not? Okay.
No, it wasn't listed there. And well, not yet. Maybe when they get a few more episodes in, they'll put them all up. I don't know. But it wasn't there last week when I checked.
Oh, okay. Yep. Some shows I use for Hulu for, others I don't. So I'm not always up on which ones are where.
The other news show that people are talking about is Gotham. I haven't been watching Gotham, but a couple of our reviewers are really liking what Ben McKenzie is doing as a younger Jim Gordon.
Yeah, it's funny. The feedback I'm getting, it's not a show I'm watching either. Wendy on our podcast does, and she's been giving it some high marks. And from what I'm reading from some of our listeners, too, is some folks, it just seems to hit them as their kind of show, and they love it. Others have just been, it's just kind of okay. So it doesn't seem to be too much of a middle ground. It's been a lot of a love it or it's not for me kind of thing.
Yeah, I saw that. It was kind of, wasn't expecting that from a Batman-themed show.
Yeah, but as a couple of friends who are big Batman fans say, it's still way early in the mythos idea that they're still kind of sitting back and waiting, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I interviewed the teenager, the young girl who plays Selina Kyle. Mm-hmm. And when she realized what part she had won, because they were keeping all the auditions secret,
yep.
She apparently dove head first into the DC universe and started just reading up everything she could on everybody in the Batman universe. I mean, she was familiar with Batman, she was familiar with Catwoman and the Joker, but once she realized what the show was, she's like, just dove in, got all sorts of comics and DC compendiums and just was going to town reading them. And she was very excited about the role she's playing. And oh, yeah. I think the one episode I saw, it comes across. It does. So.
And it's interesting, too. You mentioned that as far as her role. I know they're doing that more and more now with, you know, such an easy access to social media and everything else that these actors and actresses go in for all these callbacks on shows, and they don't even tell them who they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that came up recently at Dragon Con. There was a little press thing for the some of the female stars for Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of ladies there, Katie Lotz and Katrina Law, were saying, you know, we didn't know. We were just going back. They were giving us lines to read that obviously weren't even specific to what the show was going to be, and then, you know, they offered us different roles, but they barely knew anything until the very end.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, her characters, she said on all the pages she was given to read for auditioning, she was trying out for somebody named Lucy.
Yeah, yeah, had the same kind of thing there. The Arrow lady said it was the name of someone wasn't in the show or the comic mythos. It was just totally
some random name. Field. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if that's what it takes for certain productions to keep certain things under wraps for as long as possible, I'm actually okay with that. You know, the whole casting process to me isn't as important as when the producer says, okay, here's my cast, let's see them work together.
Yeah, that chemistry. That's,
yeah, you got to see how they work together. What's another new one we've got? Flash.
That's the Flash. Yeah.
Speaking of DC Universe.
Yeah. Being the big Arrow fan, I was certainly very excited for that one. And it's been mostly good. I mean, there's a huge following of that. So those fans seem to be very happy with what they're doing so far. And they've done a good job. It's got a very much different tone than Arrow. you know, which is much darker.
Mm-hmm.
Flash is certainly a little more, I haven't found the right word. I don't want to say, and I don't mean it in a derogatory way, I wouldn't want to say immature, but it's definitely lighter, a little simpler so far, the first half dozen or seven episodes. They haven't gotten too complex on some of their stuff. So, but they definitely are putting some money into it. You can see that very much so with some of the special effects and folks with superpowers that are here that aren't over on Arrow. So, and I think the cast is very good. They're really kind of gelling as we're moving along.
Mm-hmm. So would you call it more of a, not really a romp, but more lighthearted?
So far, yes. Lighthearted is a good way. You know, Barry's a little more idealistic, a little naive here as opposed to Oliver Queen on Arrow. And that's also in its third season. So it's, you know, it's not a fair comparison to try to say that. But yeah, there's definitely a little bit of an aw shucks to it, and not in a bad way. It's just, it's made for some fun stuff. And it's got a little more humor with the secondary characters, too.
Well, if I remember correctly, the few, I guess I'm going to say years worth of Flash comics that I read back in the day, he was more happy-go-lucky than he was, you know, than some of the darker characters that came along later. He was more, goofy's not the right word, but...
Yeah, but he, I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's sort of like he was trying to be, because you know when Spider-Man was fighting, he'd always have like the witty comeback, and you'd see some of that in his conversations to himself. You'd see some of the little playfulness, little silliness. So having a more lighthearted tone than Arrow, while not hard to do,
yeah, I was going to say,
is probably more closer in tone to some of the comics back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, and it made for a very interesting, you know, they just did the Arrow and Flash crossover this week with the characters moving across both shows with a couple of different storylines. And you got to see even more so the difference, because obviously when they're interacting and dealing with the bad guy or the need for some other information, they go about it so differently. It created quite an interesting dynamic.
Now, was this a part one and was in one and part two was the other, or did the storylines just cross over?
It really wasn't a true part one and part two. There were two different storylines with some elements weaving throughout. So it if you were only watching one show, you could still enjoy it for what it was. You weren't left hanging if you were only a fan of one or the other. They were pretty smart on how they did this crossover. It was the characters crossing over more than it was the stories.
Okay, so for the new shows, of which we've talked about, are all DC... franchises, you would recommend people check out all of them, or check out at least the Flash and Constantine.
Yeah, based on personal experience, again, I'm enjoying both. I mean, if you asked from a quality point of view, I might say Flash is a little ahead of Constantine at the moment, but that's because Constantine kind of had a little bump in the road with some casting early.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'm finding both very enjoyable, certainly for genre fans.
All right, and like you said, for the special effects, I'm enjoying the special effects in Constantine. I mean, they do seem better than your typical TV quality, and I'm very pleased with that.
Yeah, yeah. The technology's come a long way for those of us who've been watching, you know, these for many years. So, yeah, they're finding a way to make this stuff look very natural without having to spend a big chunk of money.
So let's move on to our sophomore season highlights. We were talking before about The 100 and Sleepy Hollow. One of our reviewers, Jenny, she loves Sleepy Hollow, absolutely loves it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was a big fan of season one. I got an opportunity to moderate a panel at Dragon Con this year for it. So actually during the summer, I did a full rewatch, and not a lot of our shows hold up real well. You were talking a little earlier if a show's worth the time to go back. But Sleepy Hollow was even better on a rewatch. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it's just such a freight train storytelling-wise. They did such a great job of making that happen, and the chemistry is wonderful between our leads there. So that first season was outstanding. Now, the second year so far, got to be honest, I really like it, but I don't love it as much. I think what happened is the typical TV situation where they upped the order from 13 to 18 and kind of decided if we're going to make this thing sustainable, We got to kind of slow down the story a little bit. We got to bring in some secondary characters. So it's kind of natural stuff, and it's still good, but it's not the same tone that it was in season one. So that's getting a little people fidgety, you know, with where things might go. So, but when you got folks like John Noble and the wonderful writing here, you've got several producers and folks who've done many other genre shows from Fringe to many others, it's a very strong genre show still.
So what would you put your finger on as what has, I guess, slid a little bit for season two for Sleepy Hollow? Is it the writing or is it the pacing?
It's a little bit the pacing, certainly, because you definitely in this season have more of those, doing my air quotes here, folks, one-offs, you know, the bottle episode, the topic of the week with just 2 or 3 minutes about the big arc, whereas season one really was the big arc. It was Abby and Ichabod and pending doom, and that they really had to go full speed. And it was very much focused on those two characters, and then eventually John Noble when he came in later in the season. But this year we're up to 4 or 5 characters that are vying for main story time. So it's not that it's bad. It's a case of where if you probably jumped in at the beginning of season two, you might think it's a wonderful show, because it still is.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have that same two lead characters every week, you know, where the episode ends and you literally want to reach out for the next episode. I mean, if there's a show designed to be binged watched, it's season one of Sleepy Hollow, because it's just one continuous freight train ride.
I'm going to have to put that on my list then. Yeah, that was the rapid expansion of characters was one of the things that kind of slowly put me off on Once Upon a Time. Mm. It just became too many people, too many stories. I'm like, really?
Yep.
Just
yeah.
Bring it back.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. And that's a good example of that. There are some wonderful actors there on Once and some ones I'm very interested in. But you're mm-hmm. right, it turned into where I'm only getting the character I like for 10 minutes this week.
Yeah,
that's tough. And that's a little bit of the Sleepy Hollow thing, is it's a changing dynamic. It's for a good reason. I do think there's a lot of great stuff there. But and there's a lot of fans kind of wondering that. And there's some folks who just love the fact that we're getting some of those folks who got very little time in season one are now kind of coming forward in two. So, you know, it's a case of appreciating that if you're going to make this thing last for a few seasons, you can't stay at that same pace they did in season one. They
True.
Threw the kitchen sink twists and turns and plot things that were wonderful to watch. But yeah, that was on a 13 episode. Let's see if this thing sticks. I got to say, when I first heard of the concept of Sleepy Hollow, I was like rolling my eyes. I'm like, how could you make a series last out of that? But they did. So props to them.
Yeah, it's if they can expand how much time the different cast members get and slow down the pacing, but still keep the stories intense, it does make the show sustainable beyond 3 seasons. And
yeah.
If that's what they're going for, longevity, I'm all for that.
Yeah. It's I know it's tough. Again, those of us who've been longtime fans realize, or at least that's what we're talking about, is that's probably why. A lot of other fans are like, well, this isn't the same as my stuff before. You know, they moved my cheese. They changed it. On. It's still a business, folks. They still got to make some money. So.
Yep. And making money means being on the air for more than 10 episodes.
Yeah,
so.
Yep. That's exactly it. So yeah. I get it. At least they didn't go up to 22, because then we would have had a lot more of the one-offs that tend to hit so many of the shows we watch.
Yeah, I think for some shows, for some series, that 13 to 16 episode is a sweet spot.
Yeah, it very much is. You know, we've talked many times, I know you have too, on the podcast, that as we tend to call it, the British model, the shorter mm-hmm. seasons, as long as you get a good story, I'd rather be left wanting than talking about those 2 or 3 eps that bored me.
Yeah. I mean, look, Sherlock and Luther hit home runs out of 3-episode seasons, so.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done. You know, just do a mini series every year, you know, 10 hours, 12 hours, 15 hours, and call it good. Because what, Agent Carter is what, going to be 13 episodes or going to be 8 episodes?
No, I think it's even less. I think it's around 6 or 8. It's really a very small little, it's just filling in that break for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., really. So I think it's maybe right around 8.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the other sophomore show that you're really, really high on is The 100.
Yeah, this is one of those surprises. And I bet some of you right now are rolling your eyes going, oh, another CW show. But and very honestly, when I started watching it, because, you know, on our podcast, we try to cover almost all the TV shows, I kind of felt like, well, probably by 300 episodes in, I'm going to be bored and dropping this thing like a rock. But it's kind of surprised me. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a great show. It's probably not in my top tier of shows I watch. It's not up to an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. level or even an Arrow. But, you know, this thing is slowly getting better. And a lot of those very wooden or two-dimensional characters have really started to expand quite a bit here as we've moved into the second season. So it's been a very pleasant surprise.
No, I honestly didn't realize that it had come back for a second season until I was just browsing through the listing, seeing what was on. I'm like, wait, that's still around? Wait, because I thought the 100 and the Tomorrow People were both Fox shows and that they had both been canceled. And come to find out, whoops, that was a CW show.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't great in the ratings. It was a little bit from, again, press stuff, a little bit of a surprise that it came back. But like I said, I'm kind of, it's one of those ones that I look at my DVR, I got a few shows, and I'm like, you know, I'm really kind of curious. Where are we happening on the 100? And I pull it up. I mean, for those who aren't aware, it is set in a post-apocalyptic future. There was like this massive nuclear war that made the Earth almost uninhabitable. So like 2,000 people ended up being sent off in this spaceship they call the Ark. And then, you know, many years later, like almost 100 years later, this ship is going to eventually fall out of the sky, so they have to take some risks, and they send down 100 people to see if the Earth is inhabitable, and it's mostly
juvenile delinquents.
Yes, being a CW show, just what you would think. But so these, I want to call them kids. I mean, you know, they have to fend for themselves, and it's some nice surprises as these kids realize what they have to do to survive and the problems they encounter. And naturally, it's as it turns out, they're not alone. There are other humans still alive in different groups. So it's been interesting. And they've got just a few really good seasoned actors that are playing some of the adults as well. You know, Henry Ivan Cusick, who was on Lost. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Washington, we've seen in many things for years.
Yeah.
That really bring a nice tone to the show, too. So like I said, I'm not saying it's the greatest thing ever, but I'm saying a lot of folks might be pleasantly surprised if they check it out.
Well, it is a CW, so there have to be as many people between the ages of 18 and 25 as possible. They have
and shockingly,
to
shockingly, they're all very attractive.
They're very attractive, and they all have they're all emotionally troubled.
Good part of them are, but it's not overboard. I like I said, that'll turn me off fast. There was a little bit of that. You know, maybe in the first third of the season, and then they eventually found a good storytelling point where that became less of the story. So that was
that's good. That's good. Yeah. The whole let's try, because for the longest time, CW shows were let's try 90210 in a firehouse. Let's try 90210
in space
underground. 90210 on Mars and or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's still a good part of that happening, but give them credit; they're doing it in a realistic way.
I do. They give a lot of speculative shows more time to mature, age well. Mm-hmm. I mean, what Supernatural was supposed to go 3 seasons? It's on there. What is this season 10?
This is season 10.
So,
yep.
They're not. Supernatural is the CW's X-Files. They're not letting go of that puppy for nothing.
No way. Those ratings just stay rock solid regardless of the quality of the stories.
But at least the people on Supernatural are aware enough to poke fun at themselves when necessary.
Oh, you've got to love the self-referential stuff and breaking the fourth wall and winking at the camera. You know, it's fun stuff. I'm still on board 10 seasons in, okay? Yeah, so they're doing something right.
Yeah, they have perfected the meta.
Yes. Meta of the meta, yes.
Goodness gracious. So let's now talk about a few of the things coming up the rest of 2014. And into 2015 that some of us are looking forward to. I'm looking forward to a couple of shows. Agent Carter, we've already mentioned.
Yep.
That's an interesting experiment. I didn't realize it was 8 episodes. I'm not sure where they're going to go with that, but I guess
I think it's a good experiment.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they was it last year or the year before, the folks from Once Upon a Time had that other, the Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
The Wonderland. I mean, that
And
was
they
what,
are,
10 episodes, 8?
yeah,
Yeah.
their initial idea was we're going to do just what they're doing now with Agent Carter. We're going to run it in the holiday break. And then they got too full of themselves, like, no, this is so good. We're going to make it its own separate time slot. And then it withered and died. So I'm very curious, not only on the content of Agent Carter, but this idea of something to fill in on a break, so we don't get a bunch of reruns like you will in many shows, and also the idea of a short run, so that if it does well in the ratings, we bring it back. If it doesn't, that's fine. We got at least a complete story.
Right. It's important for a short series like that to have, even if it could continue on, you need a story that has a beginning and an end. You know, you have to close off this one little story arc and then start somewhere else next season, you know?
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. Like I say, I'm looking forward to it. They're starting with a double episode. It's first week of January, I believe. So, and they've been some of the casting they've been doing. Bridget Regan, who was on Legend of the Seeker, is coming in to play a role. Hayley Atwell is going to do some great stuff, I think, with it as the lead. So it's interesting. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, the first teaser that came out, it was like a 2-minute teaser that came out. They brought back the actor who played Howard Stark in the first Captain America movie. And I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. And they introduced Jarvis, which I thought was awesome.
Exactly. They're sticking to some mythos here, so
Yeah, so they're keeping in line with the Marvel Cinematic Universe backstory that they've built up through some of the other movies. And that to me is more important than anything.
yeah, folks are
Because
going to be very comfortable very fast.
yeah, people are familiar with these characters, they've seen these characters, and they get little tidbits that may or may not show up in future episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or future movies.
Yes.
I
Yeah, they
mean, I
tie it all
think,
together pretty well,
yeah.
so.
I honestly think that we're going to get enough backstory on Jarvis in Agent Carter that we start to see why Tony is so, I don't know, appreciative and dependent on Jarvis, and what happens to Jarvis in the Age of Ultron movie. Because, spoiler alert, Jarvis becomes another character. I don't know. Can we go ahead and say that? I mean, it's been out there for a while.
It has been. So,
Yeah.
I consider it okay. We know some of the spoiler phobes might
Right.
send us hate mail.
Jarvis becomes Vision. If you look in the San Diego Comic-Con poster for Age of Ultron that was released, you can see off in the distance a character flying in the air, floating. He has red skin, a green tunic, and a yellow cape. That's Vision, people, and Jarvis becomes Vision. And when I read that, my mind just went because I had no idea they were going in that direction with it. So yeah, we get to see Jarvis. We maybe find out a little bit more of the back history between, what he was doing when S.H.I.E.L.D. was starting up way back in the day. And maybe we get a few little breadcrumbs that lead into Age of Ultron.
I suspect we will, absolutely.
So, what else on the coming up soon tab do we have?
We also have on TNT, starting on Sunday the 7th, the series The Librarians,
Yes.
following up on many of you may have seen the three previous movies with Noah Wiley. So yeah, this is a short run, 10-episode first season on TNT, airing on Sunday nights. And I gotta say, I have been very impressed with the trailers so far.
I'm a huge Dean Devlin fan.
Ah, okay.
And I have enjoyed pretty much almost everything that I've been aware that he's done. He caught my attention in a movie 100 years ago as an actor.
Ah,
He
okay.
was in a really, really crappy B movie. You might be familiar with it, Moon 44 with Michael Paré.
Oh, that sounds familiar. It's been forever, but it sounds familiar.
The reason it stuck out in my mind is because I first saw that movie probably It was on like HBO or Showtime when I first saw it. Mm-hmm. But then I saw it again after The Matrix had come out. And I realized that the character that Dean Devlin was playing was very similar to Tank's character. The guy in the communications gear, he's always keeping everybody in sync or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he was the sort of like, not really the sidekick, but he was the guy that the main character depended on. And he, spoiler alert, he dies at the end. But I, for some reason, what he did in that movie, it just, his name stuck out to me. I'm like, okay, Dean Devlin, I'll keep an eye on that. And then the next thing I saw his name on was Independence Day. And then you get Stargate. And then you get Stargate, the TV show. And then I'm like, you know, he's doing pretty good as a producer.
There's some guys who have it, guys and gals. And mm-hmm. that's definitely, you know.
And as far as I'm concerned, he knocked it out of the park with Leverage. And then he had, you know, the librarian movies. And then I'm like, okay, he's doing a librarian TV series. I'm there.
Oh, yeah. And they've really, the same thing, too, as far as the casting. I mean, they brought in Christian Kane. You mm-hmm. mentioned Leverage. I mean, great on Angel. You got mm-hmm. Rebecca Romaine. John Larroquette is in here. You know, Linda Booth is going to be a lot of fun. She's played some crazy, wacky characters over the year. Goodness, I remember her back to the days of helping out Tia Carrera on Relic Hunter. So,
oh, wow. Talk about digging back into the way back. Wow.
Cheesy syndicated stuff. Yes, way back, folks, early 2000s. But yeah, the trailers just look like it's, this thing is going to be a bucket of fun. It really does. So I'm hoping it lives up to it.
Oh, so I'm going to have to check out more of those trailers and just gear myself up, because that type of series, hopefully it keeps coming back. You know, you get 10 episodes of awesome, and then you wait a year and you get 10 episodes of awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, TNT and USA have done pretty good by that.
Yeah.
Because TNT did it with The Closer. I think USA did it with 4400 and Burn Notice, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. We also had Saving Grace on TNT. They know how to do drama stuff. Mm-hmm. So
hopefully we get a lot more librarians to keep talking about in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Sci-Fi Channel has a couple of new things coming up. There's a miniseries called Ascension. I think starts in, what, 2 weeks? Mid-December?
Yeah. I think it's the 15th, 16th, and 17th, 2 hours each night, miniseries style. Mm-hmm.
This is really weird. I may harp on Sci-Fi's maltreatment of certain TV series.
No.
Every now and then they annoy me, and I let them. I let my feelings be known. But
you have several billion other fans.
Yeah, but I have to admit, they have always, I'm going to say 95% of the time, done a really, really impressive job with the miniseries.
They've got a good track record. You have to give them credit there, and they're trying a few of those coming up in 2015 too. So it's going to be interesting to see how this one does. I mean, they got several of the faces we're familiar with from other shows they've done. I'm going to say I'm not sure. I'm getting a little concerned from the previews that mm-hmm. this is getting a little too focused on some of the character interactions. I mean, it's set in space. It's this whole idea of, you know, this spaceship or whatever they want to call it that went up, you know, back in the 60s.
Yeah, generation ship.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think they're calling it that, but that's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah. So I'm going to be watching, but I hope it focuses on some good story bits and we don't get too much of, you know, who's sleeping with who kind of thing. I mean, so we'll have to wait and see. But it is nice that it's in the middle of December when a lot of our shows will be on break anyway. So it's a good time to dive into a mini-series.
Slide in there, yeah. And something you and I are both looking forward to is 12 Monkeys as a series.
Yeah, this kind of, in the same vein, it's kind of like a Sleepy Hollow. When I first heard this, I'm like, really? You're going to have enough to do a series on 12 Monkeys?
That's kind of my feeling too. I'm like, okay, where are we starting in relationship to the movie, and how long are you gonna? Where are you going with this? You have me curious because I really enjoy 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, that I mean that's such an oddity type movie that I'm just wondering how they're gonna bring that to TV. It's one of those ones I kind of sat on the sidelines when I first heard about it, like, okay, I'm going to need a lot of proof before I'm going. But then slowly, you know, they've been putting out some trailers, some posters, some teasy stuff. I'm like, okay, they're actually doing a good job of getting me interested.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. Two shows that aren't even in production yet, but are on the table for HBO, are Westworld and Foundation.
Oh yeah, Westworld, they have got some major names associated with that. So
yeah, and the most impressive things about that was they had already shot the pilot, and HBO saw the pilot and immediately ordered a full 22 episode season. I was like, whoa, what, huh?
Yeah, okay. They jumped hard on that.
Yeah, and my feeling is they know that Game of Thrones has a limited length, whether it goes 7 seasons or 8 seasons, who knows, but you need to start planning now to get something to replace it after, you know, as it's winding down. And it sounds like they're hoping Westworld is going to be that.
Well, and especially because, as you said, it's HBO. So, I mean, they can go as dark, you know, story-wise or character-wise as they want to. And when folks, if you're unaware, you're talking about actors like James Marsden, Evelyn Rachel Wood, Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins, yeah.
Miranda Otto. I mean, these are some big, heavy hitters. So, and that original movie premise, you know, and that's what they're calling this, is a dark odyssey about the dawn of artificial consciousness and the future of sin.
Yeah, the little.
I'm sorry, I'm wringing my hands waiting for this one.
The little 6-second Vine teasers they released, that just wasn't enough. Give me more.
No,
give me more
total
teasers.
Tease.
Yeah, give me more teasers.
All we've heard so far is 2015, so I have no idea when.
Yeah. So, well, at least we know that the pilot has already been shot, so they have something to show us and get us hungry for more, so we'll see where that goes. But I honestly think that HBO is going for these original series content to... Next year, sometime in 2015, they are untethering their HBO Go app.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, the fact that I could be able to download an app to my computer and buy Game of Thrones as it's airing without having to be a subscriber to HBO, that is so appealing to me. I cannot describe the giddiness.
I know, but you do still have to temper it a bit, because realize that they have such a cash cow with the cable companies. You know they're not going to tick them off. So they're not going to totally make this just as easy as being able to get them if you don't have a cable subscription.
No,
so,
that's the whole entire plan. The entire plan
they
is...
Haven't put
they're not going
to...
Yeah, they're not going to cut their own throat with the cable companies.
No, so, you know,
but,
whether it means these things are delayed beyond when they air, or you've got to pay an arm and a leg for the subscription.
You know what? I honestly think they're going to put the original content on there, and, you know, sports and movies stay on the cable.
It could be interesting. I mean, the fact that they're doing it, I think, is great. So I don't want to be negative, but I'm just... Yeah, I'm wondering how they actually implement it so that they don't tick off the cable people, but they still give us good access to stuff without
having to have
support.
That's just it. If this is successful enough and they make more money than the cable companies are paying them, this could inspire other premium channels on cable to do the same thing. And if that doesn't change the minds of the cable companies to ditch the bundling and go a la carte, nothing will.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time. It's an exciting time, but
because this is using online apps from the content providers directly, that is the best way to do a la carte ever. I mean, think about
it.
The
foundations are there. They're coming in.
They're there.
You know, it's like I said, it's a wonderful time. But then we talked about it earlier, between DVRs and taking your shows to go on smartphones and computers, it's a pretty exciting time to be able to be absorbing all this stuff.
Yep. To pick and choose what I want to watch, when I want to watch it, and be happy to pay for it if they make it available? Yes, I'll do that. You hear me, Fox? There are several old sci-fi shows that have not come out on DVD yet. I want them.
Yep. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting close.
I serious. There's a couple of series out there that I would buy on DVD tomorrow if they were available. They've never been available, so such is life. Anyway, I think we covered everything.
Yeah, got good little talk on some of the things behind us and coming soon for us genre fans.
Yeah, and we are going to, I'm going to drop a little teaser here. Kevin and I will be back in January to talk about 12 Monkeys more in depth.
Yep, looking forward to it.
I'm definitely looking forward to this. So we'll see what January brings. But yeah, thank absolutely. You. Thank you for your time, Kevin. Love talking TV with people who are as addicted to genre TV as I am.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot of fun, Summer. Yeah, absolutely.
And again, if you want to hear more about other TV shows that we haven't covered, you can go to the Slice of Sci-Fi website. You can go to Kevin's website, tuningintosci-fi-tv.com. And if you like cheesy sci-fi and horror movies, SaturdayBMovieReel.com is the place to go.
Yeah, we have fun with the lower grade stuff.
Just call it mindless popcorn movies.
Well, and I'll throw a couple of quick teases because they aren't out in the U.S. yet. Coming in March, folks. But I already have reviews up for Wolf Cop.
Wolf Cop.
And Zombievers. That'll give you the idea of the kind of stuff I like, folks.
Where do they get these titles? Zombievers and Wolf Cop. Well,
yes. Two classics, I'm sure they will be someday.
Hey, it sounds better than Zombie Strippers. It really does. I'll give you that. Zombievers, that's...
Yeah. I'll share the trailer with you after we get off here.
Awesome.
Every year at my B-movie screening at Dragon Con, I now do, before the movie, to give it the true drive-in feel, I do 3 or 4 trailers. And I try to find the craziest ones out there. And this year, I had the one for Zombievers. The place went bananas.
Oh, jeez.
Absolutely loved it. And actually, Wolf Cop ended up on Entertainment Weekly's list of the 20 best movie posters for 2014. Because it's old-style artwork. So it's really, really kind of cool looking.
Cool. Well, thank you again.
Oh, and, my pleasure, Summer. It's great to talk to you again.
And that'll do it for this week's Slice of Sci-Fi. If you want to check out more news and reviews for the genre entertainment world, just head on over to our website, www.sliceofscifi.com. You can also check us out on Facebook and on Google+ and on Twitter. Get some conversations going about some of the other items we're talking about in our favorite little corner of the entertainment world. If you're enjoying the show and you're an iTunes subscriber, please leave us a review in iTunes. And as always, our phone number is 602-635-6976. Call in, leave me a voicemail, and we'll get to play some of these coming up. Or if you want to record one and email it in, that works too. Send it to summer@sliceofscifi.com. And thank you to everybody who's continued to support us this year while we're going through these transitions. Keeping the donations and subscriptions going has really, really helped. And I'm eternally grateful to the band Sci-Fried for providing us with some, in my opinion, kick-ass music for the new Slice of Sci-Fi themes. So thank you again for tuning in, and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week.